Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. Welcome back for another episode, and welcome to Sunday. I hope your weekend is going great. I hope the rest of it goes even better. And today we're going to pick up where we left off. If you remember, last week we started a series on hell and heaven, and we looked at the idiom entitled The Weeping and Gnashing of Teeth. If you didn't hear that, go back and check it out, because I lay some groundwork and some tools that are going to help us expand and greatly influence our ideas about heaven and hell. A lot of times, Hollywood or Dante's Inferno seems to be the predominant view that people have, and I think we can do way, way better. Today, in part two, we're going to look at the lake of fire. And I got to tell you right now, you're going to need to put your thinking caps on. This is not going to just pop right out real easy. It's not like I'm going to just describe the lake of fire. What I'm doing is taking countless readings of scripture and countless verses that are either explicit or inferred, and I'm weaving them together into a tapestry. And there's certain preconditions, there's certain presuppositions that we all need to have in order to make sense of these categories that I'm going to be using. And so it seems like I might be going on rabbit trails, but what I'm doing is I'm laying down some cones so that you can get to this place that I'm coming from without having to do all the work and the reading and the textual analysis and things like that. Okay, so follow along as best you can. I think you're going to do great. But I think at the end of this, you're going to have a new perspective, and that's my goal. And to start off with, we really cannot understand our views on hell until we understand why we want others to go to hell. Why we really do want hell to exist for most of us. We kind of have to pause and access that portion of our thinking that gets angered or that gets offended at the idea that people who are worse than us can have the same eternity as us, right? We don't feel like it is fair if we give our life to a religion or a faith system and we make sacrifices with our money and our time and our effort to put it out there for others. And others don't do that kind of thing, and then somehow they end up next to us in eternity. That would seem unfair, right? So heaven and hell are deeply based in a sense of justice, and we're going to get there. And it's all about retribution for most of us. Of course, just a little hint, there's a different story there about justice, and we're going to get to that. But last week, I showed you how Gehenna, which is the Greek word for hell, was the place of weeping and gnashing of teeth, right? This is the city dump just outside of Jerusalem to the south, known as the Valley of Hinnom. And the same inside-outside imagery is used in Revelation 22, verse 15, when describing this New Jerusalem, or heaven, right? You have this idea of a city with gates. There's things on the inside, and then there's things on the outside, right? And Gehenna was this place on the outside, the walls of Jerusalem. Okay, so we have to keep these images in mind so that we kind of get a grasp of how this is emerging, okay? It may not just be a physical, one-day, far-off, distant spiritual place. Heaven is something deeply different, and the language of Scripture is trying its best to get us there. And so, like a typical light switch, you know, light switches are on or off. And they use binary language to create a contrast, and that contrast illuminates concepts that are hard to grasp. you know, maturity moves us into kind of a dimmer switch, right? As we grow older, we move from black and white thinking into realizing there are shades of gray. And so the dimmer switch framework evolves in us as we become more mature and gain more categories. And so likewise, our concept of heaven and hell has to also mature in a similar way. Heaven and hell for most people is an on or off switch. You know, you drive down the road on your way to Nebraska and there's literally a big, a billboard that says heaven or hell. And then it gives you John 3:16 at the bottom. It's literally a binary understanding. It's either a place you go when you're bad or it's a place you go when you have Jesus in your heart. Okay, so think about this. As you grew up, you moved out of binary thinking for the most part, or at least in some part, and you realize there are shades of gray. And it is the same with heaven and hell. So in a binary way, though, the kingdom of heaven was contrasted in the parables with weeping and gnashing of teeth, which is what we showed last week. And this week, we're going to show you how the book of life is contrasted with the lake of fire. Okay, so when we talk about the lake of fire, we have to know something also about the book of life in the same way that we had to know something about the city of Jerusalem in order to know something about the Valley of Hinnom or Gehenna and this new Jerusalem and then outside the gate, right? See, these binary images start to bubble to the surface and they elucidate something meaningful for us. So the binary interpretation focuses on the extremes of heaven and hell, but it misses the bigger story of truth. In fact, I'd say we miss the bigger story of truth the more we are sucked into the either or of it. Biblical images point to something that is bigger than the images themselves. They point to a reality, an ultimate reality. God is truth. God is truth. And within perfect truth, falsehood cannot exist. You can't have anything false or deceptive or deceiving in an environment where it's completely truth. Like if it's full bright light, there are no shadows. The scripture uses the Greek word pseudos for the term lie or deception or falsehood. Pseudos. That's really important. Because we're going to understand pseudo in a minute. But what if every living being, every person, is known completely by their true name given by their maker? Right? I mean, every single person, if there's such a thing as the eternal knowledge of God and the wisdom of God and its perfect omniscience, there was never a day where any single individual who ever lived or ever will live has not been in the perfect omniscience or mind of God. And therefore, they've always existed. Otherwise, when they came on the scene, they would be new information. And if it was new information, God was not omniscient, all-knowing. You see how this works? So perfect truth is a synonym for the knowledge of God. And we see this in Psalm 139, 16, where he says, "Before any of my days came to pass, you knew them altogether." Right? Thus, the book of life is perfect truth. And the book of life cannot contain a pseudonym, a false name. And so, ultimately, the false self cannot exist. Nothing false can exist in perfect truth. Furthermore, everything based in falsehood cannot ultimately exist either. And so we get this idea that if a person tells a lie, that the person is a liar, and then the liar is destroyed. The whole person, everything, the good and the bad. If it's destroyed, then it's lost from the knowledge of God, which is impossible because God can't lose knowledge. So something other than the whole person has to go. And we know that all false things have to go, right? This is why the lake of fire exists. Think about this. It's the only logical place for falseness. Every false thing is to become consumed by fire. Consider this. Death and hell are both ultimately thrown into the lake of fire. Revelations chapter 20, verse 14. You see, it says, then all those who are not written in the book of life are thrown in the lake of fire. And what does that mean? That means all pseudonyms, all pseudos, are thrown into the lake of fire. That is an amazing reality. But what about the people? You see, once we move into a ternary framework or a system of three instead of a binary framework, a dimmer switch, right? Scripture begins to open up a little bit more for us. Everything false is punished and destroyed in the presence of truth. You see how that language torments falseness? Just the truth just sets you free. The truth just eradicates everything that's false. The truth undoes all the lies, right? It's the true self that emerges. Now, you can get at this reality by using a framework other than truth. You can do it through using a framework of holiness, as many Christians do. You can get at it through using a framework of love, as many, many people do who may not even subscribe to Christianity. And so the Bible uses all three, truth and love and holiness, to kind of get at this ultimate reality. And it does it through many, many different kinds of stories. Now, Scripture repeatedly uses fire to purify and to cleanse. And we saw that last week in Gehenna, right? Like the metaphor of the crucible that we see in Zechariah 13, verse 9, or 1 Peter 1, 7, the fire purifies the gold by burning off the slag. And this crucible metaphor is used throughout Scripture, that the fire is used to make the good thing better by burning off all the impurities. And so the imagery depicts a person really finding their true self, the burning off of the falsehood, the false self. It's another way of saying that we go through hell to find ourselves. Now, what about our deeds? What about all this talk about our good deeds and our bad deeds? Do they matter? Well, of course they matter. Yes, and we're told in Scripture that on the judgment day, Revelations 20, verses 12, that every single one of our deeds will be examined, both good and bad, and not a single deed will be missed. Every one of them was written down in a book, as it's depicted in the narrative. Now, contrary to popular opinion, sinful deeds do not make us into sinners. And that is an idea that is continually taught over and over and over through the church. And that is that, well, you become a sinner because you sin. But there's a notion in here that's different than that, that says we sin because we are sinners. And some of you may feel uncomfortable with that language. Another way Scripture says this is that to say that we're born into a context of sin. Or there's a framework that's false. So we're born with a pseudonym into a pseudo system. And if we do not exchange the pseudo, the false system, for the kingdom, which is truth, we become defined by the system. This is just another way of saying that, like, if you don't ever learn anything in life, you're stuck. You're trapped. You can't move. And so much of this is really appealing to raising of the consciousness. You know, the false pseudo system imprisons the true self until the fire of suffering can release it. This is the narrative of Scripture. Now, Reformed anthropology or Calvinistic theology, they always view humanity as total depravity, right? Totally depraved. And Rousseau was a philosopher that saw humanity as basically good, but corrupted, okay? And both these anthropologies require a repair, right? You can't have a totally depraved humanity, or even one that has been corrupted, remain in the state that it is without some kind of a repair mechanism or plan to get humanity back on track. And the repair plan is ultimately the theology that ensues out of whatever anthropology you begin with. So whether you think humanity is basically good or humanity is basically evil, what you need to realize is that the theology that grows out of either one of those camps is too small. If it stays on one side or the other in a binary way, the theology is too small. And so what we have to learn from this is that we are both, right? We are both good and evil, and we potentiate both. We can be good and become better. We can be bad and become worse. This is vital because this is the way of saying heaven and hell are within us. Zechariah 12:1 or Luke 17:20. You know, Jesus saying, behold, the kingdom of heaven is within you. It's in our midst. It's among us. It is here. You see, heaven and hell are states of consciousness here and now. So what makes us think we're going to go to heaven one day if we miss heaven here and now? What makes us think any of us can escape a purifying fire? See, this judgment day that we're used to hearing about is today. You see, every single moment of awareness is judgment day. It's judgment moment. Nonetheless, Scripture uses a notion of future day to anchor us into critical self-awareness, right? I mean, if you think something bad is going to happen one day in the future, then you become much more focused on how you're behaving and what you're thinking about. And this helps us when our faith is young. But as we mature, the future day is less vital. It's less important because we remain more and more in the presence or present moment. You see, mature people have an ability to stay in the moment and not be pulled off by the future or the past, by regret or by worry. You know, saying this another way, this is how we possess the mind of Christ in 1 Corinthians 2:16, or it's how we live by the Spirit, as it's seen in Romans 8:4. These are all different ways of expressing the same ultimate reality. So let me ask you this. What does the Bible really say then? Well, I'm going to read you a passage in conclusion. And I think this is going to sum up all that I've said right now. So if you're sitting there and you're thinking, gosh, you know, I don't know, Kev. I don't know if I'm buying this thing that the, you know, hell or the lake of fire is just to purify a person. I'm not really convinced about that. I'm wondering if you're missing something. Listen to the words of Paul. And he says this: if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, or straw, he says, anyone's work will become manifest, for the day, will disclose it, because it will be revealed by fire. And the fire will test what sort of work each person has done. And if the work that anyone has built on the foundation survives, he or she will receive a reward. And if anyone's work is burnt up, he or she will suffer loss, though he himself or herself will be saved, but only as through fire.
Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.